We bring in friend of the show, Bill Shanks. Hey, Bill, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing well. When are you going down to Florida?
March 1st.
All right.
Next Friday, and I'll be driving down. Y'all better have a good show on that day. I'll probably listen to y'all in the morning when I leave. So
no pressure.
I'll be depending on y'all to get me to the Georgia line or something. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, yeah. How long are you going to stay? Are you going to make more than one trip?
Yeah, I'll go for a week and then come back and probably get the last couple of days of spring training. And I want to go to the new facility down there that's going to be the last game on that Monday, I believe. So I'm trying to configure the schedule around that. So, yeah, we're going to have two trips and looking forward to it.
By the way, he's the host of the Bill Shanks Show, 93.1 FM in Macon. 98.3 FM in Warner Robins and South Central Georgia. Also, 105.9 FM in Warner Robins. He's everywhere. He's Bill Shanks. All right, man, where to begin? Non-Braves question. What were your thoughts on the Padres and the Manny Machado signing?
A lot of money. I was really surprised he got the 10 years, and now I think it guarantees that Bryce Harper will get the 10 years. We were obviously waiting on something to happen and wondering if they were going to have to accept a shorter deal. But in the end, Machado at least got what he wanted, which was a 10-year deal for a bunch of money. Look, they've got the best farm system in baseball. They're really good. I still think between Atlanta's young major league talent and the Braves farm system, they've got a better young core compared to San Diego. But now you could kind of argue that with Machado, it's obviously a different situation with them. But I still think the Braves, I'm not very objective, I guess, of that because I know the Braves' talent. But the Padres are very good. They got a very good nucleus of players. And it's going to be interesting to see how their pitching kind of emerges because they have taken a little bit of a different route than Atlanta, although they've got some pretty decent pitching prospects like Mackenzie Gore. So a lot of money and still kind of waiting for the other dominoes to fall. I mean, there was Josh Harrison signed yesterday, but there's still so many free agents out there. You just wonder, you know, when the games start, will that be the trigger to have more of them go ahead and fall into place? But I'm tired of almost predicting because it's not worked out the way I thought it would. Nobody really predicted what this could have been, so it's been a weird one. But he got his money, and you know, that'll make the Padres formidable moving forward for certain.
Do you think that Harper knows where he's going right now?
Well, there's something that still tells me he doesn't want to go to Philadelphia. And it was funny, yesterday on MLB Network, they were saying, the commentators were saying that it looked like that the Phillies were pretty much it for Harper. And that the Phillies were afraid about going, you know, negotiating against themselves almost and not having any other team involved. And then a couple of hours later, John Heyman from FanRag or whatever he writes for is tweeting that there are really five teams that have made 10-year, $300 million offers to Bryce Harper. And he's just deciding that. And it was like, wow, does Scott Boras have his hand all the way up your backside? Because it was like, you know, we heard that on the MLB Network where the Phillies were it, and then all of a sudden Heyman's tweeting out that there's more than one team, and you know agents feed these national reporters a lot of scoop. So I don't know if he does or not. I don't think he wants to go to Philadelphia. I think he would have really signed with them if Philadelphia was really where he wanted to go. And I wonder if he wants to go to the Giants. But I don't know if they've offered him that 10-year contract. And you would think that now that Bochy's going to be leaving in the year, it's just interesting about San Francisco. I think you've got to watch the Giants on him. But I don't know if he knows right this very moment where he's going to be, no.
Bill, I've got really two things kind of about this. The first one, I'll just go with this now and I'll ask the other one in a minute. But the first one is the 10-year aspect of this. I'm not necessarily concerned with money when it comes to this, because guys are going to get a lot of money. That's not any new information. But 10 years just seems like a really bad idea for a franchise to commit that much to anyone.
It's funny because the discussion's been about 10 years the entire offseason. And then when Machado actually got it, you could tell on Twitter that the temperature, Sam, was the same as what you're talking about. That it's like, God, do you really want to give someone 10 years? And what is Manny Machado going to be at 36? My co-host Russ Brown on my show, I think, came up with a perfect thing to talk about, and that is just think if the Braves had given Andrew Jones a 10-year contract when he was 26, and at the time, we probably would have said, yeah, sign him up. The guy's great. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's a tremendous player. He's hitting 40, 50 home runs. He's the best defender we've ever seen. Sign him up. And then, unfortunately, for him and his career, when he got to 30, he fell apart. Andrew just went and collapsed at 30, 31 years old. His numbers before and after 30 are unreal. So thank God the Braves didn't do that. But I think more and more people are looking at these contracts and saying, all right, kind of like what the GMs have done. Are these long-term deals really that smart? And how much dead money? That's part of what the Braves have tried to articulate, not very well, in the last week and a half or so, and that is that they just don't want dead money on the books. And they, you know, they've had dead money, but whether it was Mike Hampton a decade ago or B.J. Upton, or even last year they had 30-something million that was more than that, almost 40, that was dead money. And you don't want to pay for a player for what he did in his 20s for what he's going to do in his 30s. And I think more people are kind of like, wow, really? And now, at the end of the 10 years, of course, the Padres are going to have to ask the question, was he worth it? And if they win a World Series, they won't care, right? I mean, if they win a World Series in San Diego, and Manny Machado is at the forefront of that, they will not care if they have to pay him $1 billion the rest of his life, because it's kind of like that. But I think more people are kind of wondering. But Harper will get his 10 now. I mean, to Harper, happiest man in the country when they heard about Manny Machado getting 10 was Bryce Harper. No doubt about it. Because I don't think there's any way he does not get 10 years now. But, yeah, I think more people are saying, how smart is that? But you know what? Mike Trout will get 10, and there will be some others that will probably push 10. So the superstars are going to get 10. But that's the thing, Sam. The superstars may still get something like that, 8, 10 years. These other guys, they're not going to get 3.
So the market correction that you've been talking about and expecting is not the gigantic free agents. It's the older guys mm-hmm. that are getting maybe cut out for younger mm-hmm. guys and the minimum salary. Is that right?
Correct, yeah. I look at Adam Jones. I think that's the one I keep on playing to. Adam Jones has had a very good career with the Baltimore Orioles. He's 33 years old. His numbers have gone down the last few years. Probably a couple of years ago, someone like Adam Jones would have gotten a decent 3 or 4 year contract. He can't find a job. He just can't find a job anywhere. You know, it took even guys who were in the 30, 31 year range, like Andrew McCutchen and Michael Brantley. Took them, well, McCutchen was in December, so it was a little bit early for him, but I mean, it still took them a little bit of time, and they probably still did not get what they thought they were going to get. So, yeah, it's the problem with what these other guys are having to battle for, that they're probably just, I mean, Craig Kimbrell probably cannot believe what he's probably going to have to settle for. But he's 30. And the people under 30 are looked at differently than the people who have reached that. It's almost like NFL running backs. You know how that is? An NFL running back in their 30, look out. You're going to collapse at any minute, and that's why they don't get paid as much. Ask Le'Veon Bell. But it's about that age. They just don't want to pay people past that age and have that kind of a gamble, because the risk of having dead money on the books for an older player is greater.
Bill, you mentioned it earlier, the possibility of Harper, you know, ending up in San Francisco, and that might be where he wants to end up. Wouldn't that be worst case scenario for MLB if Machado and Harper both end up on the West Coast?
Well, I don't know.
Because you've already got Mike Trout out there.
Yeah, you've already got Trout out there.
Yeah, we'll never see these guys again.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be a little bit different for sure. But I just don't think he wants to go to Philadelphia. There's just something. Why wouldn't he have already signed with Philadelphia? Philadelphia has stupid money, and they're supposedly waiting on his answer. And it's February 21st. I just think he would have signed with the Phillies if he had really wanted to go there. Is he holding out for more money? I think he's holding out for another offer from someone else to match what the Phillies have put in front of him so he can go somewhere else besides Philadelphia. So I may be dead wrong. He may sign with the Phillies in an hour for all I know because it's going to be about the money. You know, it is. If they offer $320 or whatever for 10 years or whatever it's going to be, Nightingale said yesterday he thought it would be $35 million per year. And if it's $350 million, he's going to go to Philadelphia. I would be shocked if he doesn't. But I just think he's trying to do everything he can to not go to Philadelphia. But MLB, they might be a little deterred by that. But I don't know how much that's going to matter anymore.
All right, we got Tukey and Allard going on Saturday and Folty going on Sunday, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So is there anything to make of Tukey getting the first start?
Well, I think he's going to get a strong look as the fifth starter candidate. I think the main candidates for that job are going to be Tukey, Mike Soroka, and Max Fried. Maybe Gohara. Gohara obviously has gotten a little love this week because he's lost weight. He's come to camp in very good shape and a good mindset, and he's stopped drinking, which is a good thing. And so I think they'll look at him, and if they think they can – I really think the fifth starter job may almost be a rotation within itself. And I tweeted out yesterday that I think that we're going to have something that I'm calling the bridge pitcher for the Atlanta Braves, and that is someone who is not starting. You know, we've got the opener now that everybody's talking about. I think there's going to be a bridge pitcher where a starting pitcher – Let's just say if Soroka or let's say Tukey wins the fifth starter's job, and Soroka and Max Fried and Gohara need to be in the big leagues. They're three of the best 12, 13 pitchers that Braves have. And, you know, will one or two of those guys be in the bullpen and be the bridge pitcher that can pitch maybe three times a week, two innings at a time? That's something I want to look at here in the spring. And you know, it would be a good competition for the fifth starter's job, but and they would like to give Tukey a good shot at it. There's no doubt. See what he can do.
Talking with Bill Shanks.
All right, Bill. You know, we said we would get to the Braves here. Well, we've also got another thing to get to here with you, and it's the stuff that's been going on with Georgia football over the last couple days. You know, yesterday on our show, we talked about it as like a rumor that Georgia and Auburn may be flipping things around in terms of playing that game earlier in the season, and then later on in the day when the, you know, the athletic, you know, department or board had their meeting, you know, it comes out that, yeah, this game is moving. Georgia is going to be playing Tennessee later in the season in November and Auburn earlier in the season. So I'll just give you the floor. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it's disgusting, and I wouldn't help Auburn cross the damn street, to be honest with you. And I guess I'm going to sound real old when I say this. I'm 48.9, but sometimes I sound like I'm 78.9. But I just love Auburn being in November. It's you know, Chip Towers comes on our show every year and says something that has rung true with me considering the situation all week long or the last couple of days, and that is that Georgia's season usually comes down to Florida, Auburn, and Georgia Tech. And to change that, why? What is the benefit of Georgia doing this? Why not only giving them a concession or whatever? What? How does this benefit us? Now, I've been told that there have been people out there who say that Kirby wants this for recruiting purposes. I don't really understand that. I think the Georgia Auburn recruiting days at Sanford are unbelievable. I just don't know how it benefits Georgia. And look, I'm sure I take Tennessee with a passion, and I'm sure that in a couple of years there's going to be a huge Tennessee-Georgia game in November that will be unreal. It'll be cold. It'll be a great day. Maybe it will be for the SEC. So how do we know? But I just hate to lose that dynamic that we've had with Auburn for my entire lifetime. And tradition does matter in college football. If it didn't, Alabama and Tennessee wouldn't be so damn set on playing every year, and we could reconfigure these divisions and the schedule. But I just don't get it. And why help Auburn? What does it do to help us? And I just haven't heard a reason for it. I just don't get it. And I don't like it. I don't like helping Auburn out. And I was just in a meeting at 8 o'clock with a bunch of people, and there was an Auburn guy there. And, I mean, I'm telling you, the Dean Martin roast wasn't as vicious as I was on him when he walked in the door I wish I had a baby sound effect to play on my phone to ask him, because I asked him, you know, what's wrong with your team? Can't play in November, baby king. I mean, it's just unbelievable that they cry like a bunch of babies. But it's Auburn. We're used to it. We expect it. But why accommodate them?
Yeah, that's kind of our question. We don't know.
And what's the benefit? What is the true, I mean, hopefully Kirby, if he ever talks to the media again, will tell us how that benefits him. I don't think it's going to be a grand secret of if it is a recruiting thing, but why Tennessee compared to Auburn? Look, we can assume right now, because of what Tennessee's done the last 12 years, that they're going to suck for a while longer. Maybe they don't. Maybe they don't. And again, maybe that creates an unbelievable atmosphere at some point for the SEC East. But, man, David, and you and I, how many times have we gone to Jacksonville and then come right back the next week? There was nothing in between and played Auburn the next week.
Yep.
And it's just losing that dynamic, just I hate it. It sickens me. And why accommodate them, of all people?
Yeah, you know, back in the day when it used to be Florida and then Auburn, that was always that was a really, really tough game for the Dogs coming back from the Florida game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and we've been talking about this too. This will be so us, is if the 2020 schedule comes out and the Dogs have Auburn and Alabama back to back. Hopefully that won't be the case, but.
Oh, my God. Well, and everybody's got a tough schedule. There are always stretches that are tough. I mean, this year, holy cow, who has a tougher schedule than Georgia this year? This is going to be tough, man. I mean, Notre Dame in September, and then A&M in November, and you know, I hate the Austin Peay games. I don't like the fact that Greg McGeary's done that. I'm glad I don't pay for Georgia tickets, because I would be mad as hell at having to pay for three games like UMass, Austin Peay, and whatever the other one was. It's just unbelievable that we're having to play those games, and I would hate to have to pay for them. I don't like them. I think it's bad football. And coaches may say, well, they're exhibitions. Well, if that's the case, you know what? Get you some exhibition games in August like the NFL does, and be a man and play a schedule in September through November. So I hate the cash for clunker games. It's just awful. And everybody has a tough schedule. Look, there's not a team in football, probably, that can't complain about some part of their schedule that's going to be tough. But, you know, Auburn – That's what doesn't make any sense for Auburn to cry about this. You go back and look at their schedule. They've always had cash for clunkers in between Georgia and Alabama. And they've always had cash for clunkers leading into the Georgia game. I mean, they conveniently done their schedule to where they're able to have these cash for clunker games before their big games that they have. But
yeah,
to complain about Georgia and Alabama and two games in a three-week stretch, I mean, oh, my gosh, go up there and shut up. My gosh.
And that's the thing. I keep hearing that they're having to play Georgia and, you know, Alabama back-to-back, and it's like, well, no, they're not. There's a cupcake between them. So you'd almost like to have the schedule that way, because now you don't know if you would have a bye week or a cupcake between you.
Yeah.
So, I don't get that argument either.
But why a come – And they may say, Moorhead and McGeary may say, well, we're doing the SEC once. You can't tell me you couldn't have said no or tried to fight against this. And maybe Kirby didn't. Maybe there's some reason Kirby has, but I call me a traditionalist, call me old-fashioned, call me old, whatever. Georgia in November, God, I love that game. And I love Georgia-Tennessee in October. I love that, because that usually can be the first game, a little chill on it. And it's just perfectly placed, in my opinion. And you know, Tennessee could have complained about, oh my God, we got to play Georgia in 2 weeks, we got to play Alabama. But again, every team can complain about something with their schedule of how tough it is. But you know what? If you're good, you shouldn't complain about nothing. You should say, I'll bring them on.
That's what I think. Yeah, Sam,
Billy. Oh, I just got one more thing for you. I mean, yeah, I agree, because I've said this earlier. The Auburn just kind of feels like the air should be crisp, and you should be wearing a jacket. And things like that. And it'll be weird not having that. But I'm gonna switch gears to one more thing here and just ask you a question. A fan throws an object onto the court, costing your team a chance at a win. what should the appropriate punishment be for said fan?
Waterboarding. No, it was embarrassing. It was unbelievable. I felt so sorry for the team because they came back. I was in a meeting and kind of keeping up with it on my phone, and I was like, man, here they come. They came back, and I just couldn't believe it. I felt so sorry for the team and for Tom and for Coach Crane and for what they're trying to do, and that would have been a nice win like that, and unbelievable. Whoever that was. Do they know who it was? Are they
He's been identified, yeah.
Is it a student or is it a –
It looks like a student. I can't confirm for sure that he's a student, but he's looks student age and is wearing, you know, clothes that a student would wear.
And what exactly was it?
A beanie dog.
I mean, unbelievable. The guy, I mean, he ought to be kicked out of school.
Bill's going even farther than I said he shouldn't be allowed back at a UGA sporting event ever again. Bill's going kicked out of school. Yeah. I'm with you.
Oh, kick him out of school. You know, he's – I mean, that's embarrassing. I mean, just – behave, for crying out loud. You know, behave. Just behave. It's not, we don't ask a whole lot. Behave.
Yeah, I think that's plenty to ask for. Unfortunately, just doesn't always work out that way. Well, Bill, great talking to you. We'll catch you again next Thursday, and then you'll be driving to Florida next Friday, right?
I can't wait. Looking forward to it. Yes, always a pleasure, guys. Thank you.
All right, Bill. Bill Shanks.